This is the February 20 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, and from Bloomington, Illinois, and Grain Cycles, Dale Durkles. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us at willag.org anytime you'd like, and while you're there, you can buy a ticket to the All-Day Ag Outlook. That's just a bit more than a week away now, and if you've not picked up your ticket, today would be a great time to do that. Again, willag.org. The cost is just $30. Or during regular business hours on regular business days, 800-898-1065. 800-898-1065. Pick up your ticket today. Now, on this Thursday, USDA has kicked off its Ag Forum in Washington, D.C. They came out with some acreage numbers. I'd kind of like to get your assessment of what those numbers meant, if anything at all, to the marketplace and whether they give us some kind of guidepost for the year. We'll start with you, Dale Durkles.
You know, the numbers USDA put out on acreage today, I think it was 94 and 85 million on corn and beans, you know, were not enough different than what the trade was really expecting or anticipating. So I don't think they really have a huge impact on where we're going to be going forward. I think more interesting here tomorrow, looking at the S&Ds and what kind of demand numbers might be more important than what these acreage numbers were.
Kurt Kimmel?
Yeah, our old leader, Pete Manhart, you say so. Fence post to gauge off of to go by, and it starts the new crop season, actually. So we'll start to fine-tune as we get a little closer to the planting's intentions report and the growing season. Probably the most interesting thing I caught was the average cash price for corn, 360. Baseline projections last fall was 320. Boy, that 320 was discouraging. So it's nice to see them up their game a little.
Well, they upped their game, but they're still 25 cents below the season's average cash price for this year, Wayne Nelson.
Yeah, nothing there was there today that had to enthuse any farmer out there or any banker, and I think more so the bankers being depressed with what they're seeing. We are looking to see that they might add some of the Phase 1 Chinese business into the S&Ds that they stick out tomorrow. You know, we continue to hear that China is going to live up to their promises. We hear all across the news, well, oh, they're going to say force majeure. They're going to say act of God. They're going to push this back. Well, the fact of the matter is we probably expect them to push some of this back. It's Brazil's harvest now. Why wouldn't you buy the cheap at harvest type beans from them and buy the cheap at harvest time for our beans, which come in the fall? It's a year's contract to do this. They don't have to do it all in the first 2 weeks.
So those numbers did come out, Dale, and I'm wondering how they work into your cycles, if anything, or what cycles look like at this point.
You know, they're kind of a little bit out of sync in here between corn and beans, maybe to a degree right now, but the corn market's still getting towards the latter end of the window here to put in a 40-week low. So I think, you know, the negatives probably are pretty much bled out in the corn. I actually like the way the wheat market acted this last week so far, too, and I think that's telling us that we got some things that may get ready to unfold. And there's still some fundamental reason to be maybe a little optimistic there. Beans, it's a little muddy here. Maybe we've had a late 32-week low. It's really kind of hard to decipher right now. But I'm kind of thinking whatever's going on here, if China really does come into the mix and stories are out that they are shopping around for some U.S. beans, then maybe we do have a little bit of potential to turn up here in the short term.
Yeah, just a little shorter term than that. It looks like we may carve out a little 9-week low in here for the long term. But my main concern is we were down in Clinton here this last week, and Dale brought up the idea we still got some longer term five and a half year cycles to work through yet. So we're not out of the woods yet. It's going to take some great grain marketing strategies as we go in this 2020 crop, because we might not have Gary talk them into a third payment to come at us.
You know, what he was talking about, that five-and-a-half-year cycle, was in the corn market, just to make sure people understand and are clear. There's a two-year cycle. Both of those do at the end of the calendar year. And I think that really kind of tells me that, you know, whatever move that we get to the upside here the rest of the winter, maybe into the early part of spring, people need to really be serious about looking at getting some new crop stuff on the books, as well as getting some old crop sales made, too.
Wow, I'd have to agree with Dale here. I think we've got the chance. We're going to have a few things that could happen. I hope that we can see a few sales to China, a few other things happening. But one of the things that's really dampening to my good hope about this corn market is they bought some corn off the Pacific Northwest, and nobody wants that anymore because of the test weight. We're hearing from some of our livestock people that a lot of the calves were aborted because of the poor quality corn in the Minnesota and the Dakotas. And if they aborted our calves and things like that for poor quality feed, who really wants it somewhere else?
So let's talk a little bit about what's happening in those parts of the world. On Thursday, I had a discussion with Matt Bennett, who was in Fargo, North Dakota. He's on Friday, should be in Grand Island, Nebraska, to talk about producers there. But South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, Michigan, and Wisconsin all being recounted by USDA, that for acreage and for yield. That survey due out at some point. We'll find out from USDA when that comes. In fact, Lance Honig is going to be at the All-Day Ag Outlook. Maybe he'll have some insight as to how that survey count is coming at this point. Although May is the most likely time, that's when it's happened in the past. I think USDA will try to get something a little sooner than that. Still, there's an awful lot of grain standing. And we've heard, you know, P&W's not taking it. I've heard that it's maybe really low test weight. We're not sure what, you know, it's done on yield, but it's got a lot of snow on it, and it still has to be harvested.
Yeah, the funny thing is, and we've seen on a few of the things, like the Van Trump report had one, the moisture did come down quite a bit. The test weight also stayed at or below where it was a month before in that way. But the combines are getting stuck. They're going through. The snow has been on it. It's soft underneath. And I think as you listened to the report that they were talking about was, as you get farther away from Fargo, unfortunately, there's more corn, lead, and beans left in the field.
You know, I had heard some comments from Frayne Olson. He's the extension economist from North Dakota State, or I'd read here this last week. And there was a guy that's up at the Weather Service out of Fargo, too, that follows ag real closely. And he thought, you know, they've taken and probably harvested a third, maybe a little bit more of the corn that was standing out in the field here about 6-8 weeks ago. So they are getting some stuff done. But he reiterated the same thing Wayne commented about here, that, you know, because of the snow cover we have out there, you know, we have some softness underneath, and you don't have ground that's got frost down very far. So you've really put those farmers out there in a very narrow window, you know, those days when they can go out and actually run the combines and maybe do stuff. It's got to be the right temperature. It can't be too cold, can't be too hot. But I go back, we've got a guideline on this, and that was the spring of 2011 as well, where we had a lot of corn that was left over from the 2010 crop. And in 2011, we had a lot of crop harvested up in North Dakota in the late winter into spring that year. We also ended up with a fair amount of prevent plant in that area, too.
You think that'll happen again this year?
I have no reason not to believe at this point that they won't have a fair amount of prevent plant up in there. But still, when you look at last year's 19.6 total for the U.S., you got to think at this point that 14 million is going to get planted if weather is decent.
So I've been told the most likely crop to follow this corn will be soybean, simply because corn after corn probably won't work that well. Spring wheat can't go in because it'll be too late at that time, and disease problems are most prevalent, and that's the bigger of the issues. So soybean seems like it would have a wider opportunity in length of time to get that in. I'm just wondering how it all shakes out.
That's going to be a situation that's called watch as you develop, because when you get into North Dakota, the thing you have to understand, North Dakota actually, until last year, fourth largest acreage of any state in the U.S.
for
soybeans. Soybeans, you know, and a lot of people are just kind of, what? But a lot of those soybeans are in the southeastern corner, and a lot of this corn, actually, you get out and you start going west into North Dakota, too. So it's really going to be somewhat of a mix, and I think it's going to be a situation we're just going to have to watch unfold.
Give credit where credit is due. Cass County, which is in Fargo, is the largest soybean-producing county in the nation.
One of my friends has been a farm advisor or crop advisor to a lot of farmers up in the Dakota area for years, and he called the one guy and he says, what's your plan? And he says, prevent plant.
That was just it. Plan was prevent plant.
That was not the advisor's one, but the farmer said, We got so much stuff standing out there, can't get it out till late. It's going to be wet. We are planning on prevent plant at this point in time already.
Hey, just given the ratio corn to soybean, corn looks like the better of the two options at this point. Mm-hmm. And does that make much of a difference in those areas, South Dakota, North Dakota, Michigan, Minnesota, Wisconsin?
I would think so at this point in time. A couple moving parts here is one, what's crop insurance revenue policy is going to provide these guys. That's brought a lot of production in that area. Secondly, too, is this Chinese bean business. We've been plugged up in that Pacific Northwest, and that's the main outlet rail transportation there. So if we actually see these sales materialize, that could be a moving part in the end result, too.
Well, if you look at the figures we have today, and if you would figure all your costs in, you lose more per acre on beans than you do on corn when you take into, in fact, everything. Now, remember, a farmer, everything doesn't go into it. If you own your ground, you only have taxes. You don't have cost of ground, like cash renting, everything like that. But right now, beans do not figure or pencil in to be the best crop to grow as far as return on investment.
Anything on crop insurance that farmers need to know this year since we happened to mention it?
Yeah, the prices are coming in a little lower on guarantees than last year. It's been a bad February as far as prices have really went. So, you know, we're going to be down, not dramatically, but we're going to be down probably 25 cents in each of them compared to last year.
What do you see the coming year playing out like at this point under normal growing conditions?
Right now, if China comes to the game and starts buying some beans, and I think maybe even they could buy a little bit of corn. There's some comments around they were looking for some grain sorghum out of the U.S. too. You know, we could get a little bit of a lift here into the winter months themselves. We got to be a little bit careful with Brazil because, you know, we're really into the second crop corn season at this point in time. So you always got to be aware that, you know, weather situations can develop pretty quickly overnight down there. I think when you look at the soil moisture that we have across a lot of the Midwest, and I know people have seen, you know, we're flooding down in the Mid-South already, that we can get some anxiety about planting early this year instead of late. So I think we got an opportunity here to maybe see winter, early spring strengthen markets with summer maybe ending up underperforming everything. So my attitude is I want to be a seller early instead of later.
How now? How early? When do you see those rallies coming that you want to sell on?
Not now. My attitude has always been I want to be somewhere into March or maybe early April at the latest. But I don't want to wait on a June, July rally to play the game this year.
Given crop insurance, how much do you want to market?
Given crop insurance, that's really kind of an interesting twist because their guarantees are going to end up being a low ball this year. But I think you can't really factor that in because when I look at the long-term lows, like 5.5-year low in corn and 2-year low, and then you got a two and 3-year low in beans due at the end of this calendar year, I want to be a fairly aggressive seller. So I'm going to take it up to half anyway.
If you go back to day one and do the math, and Doug Yoder did a study on which option's the best. He did a study on about 30, 40 different strategies. You buy the revenue, you mark the insured bushels, then you come back and replace with some type of call strategy. That way you leave your upside open. And I think that's what we're doing in through here. We're putting some cheap calls on place. So when we do see some strength in here, we can lay into it and get this stuff priced. And if the market does go higher, we don't feel like we sold the lower end of the range.
Right. Yeah, so in that case, you have to really start to think about it in terms of profit per acre. Right.
Yeah, that's the key profit. But profit per acre, that's a moving target. One guy told me he's in the industry of consistently moving variables. But you get a ballpark idea on that. But you got to stay flexible. And you got to protect your bottom line in through here. We've been trending sideways for 5 years. Something's going to happen, but might not happen for another year. And I wouldn't bank on holding on to the cash grain. Right now, the mindset is I still got old crop I need to get rid of. I need to empty a bin, but we need to focus on new crop as we move forward.
You know, what he's talking about is courage calls. And I think they're a good idea right now, especially for trying to put in cycle lows in corn, maybe beans, and maybe even putting a low into the wheat. So that I can sell into it. If I intend to have half a crop sold in here by the time the planters are all, maybe I want to have a quarter of the corn crop, you know, with courage calls on them at this point in time, you know, buying and I haven't looked at prices, let's say a 4.5 or something like that on D's corn to just protect against the outrageous, maybe 4.25 even. You know, so you protect that upside in there. But I think, you know, the long-term cycle's pointing down tells me the, you know, summer markets could end up being a weak item this year, and that really disturbs me. Carryouts and corn are still going to be comfortable. Beans, yeah, we're tighter than we were, but still not really tight enough to get anybody excited. And on top of that, we got a big South American crop we got to work through the system too.
It is a hard thing to say, but I do think that majority of the aggressive marketers that I've seen that have done well over the last few years are basically 40 to 50% sold at this point in time and looking to add another 10 to 15% on the next bounce. So I think that's good. I do like some of the ideas of just buying some of the out-of-the-money calls, so if it does run away from us, you don't get nervous and pull out of the good hedges that you do have on.
What do we do about old crop? Because there's just an awful lot of old crop corn still left around.
We've been recommending moving it. Don't run the risk of keep it in the bin too long. Plus two, what we've been doing is replacing it. Option volatility is relatively low. In fact, you can buy in the money options less money up front than just outright buying the futures. You know exactly what your risk is. The thing is, move it, get your money, you know where you're at, and you're still in the marketplace. The leverage there and the risk just all adds up to go down that road.
You know, the basis on corn in particular really is pretty good right now, and you want to take advantage of that at this point, you know. And I'm, you know, even though I'm thinking, you know, we may turn in a 40-week low and get a little bit of a bounce, you know, I'm talking 410, 420. You know, I'm not really any big bull in the corn, you know, new crop D's 415, 4.25 range, you know. I'm really ready to sell the stuff at this point in time because I think those long-term cycles work against us as we go through time. And I've always got this, what I call half-out-of-step market avoidance strategy. What you did last year, don't repeat it this year, or the markets won't repeat it this year. So if we get a little bit of a weather anxiousness, and it is wet, and so everybody's going to have that going into planting early this year because they all missed the boat last year. You know, when that emotion seems to be high and it's early yet, sell the stuff because I think in the end we get it planted fairly well.
So he's anxious and long-term thinking that prices might not bode all that well for corn, and the acreage number just looks like it's going to be big.
It sure does, Todd, and that's why we have encouraged tremendously. And I'm more fortunate. I'm farther east than these guys are by over 100 miles. And our basis levels have been 10 to 15 to 20 cents higher than they have. And I've said, sell it, sell it, sell it. Get it out of there. This was not a good crop to store. That's one of the things we're talking about in, you know, the Pacific Northwest up there. Gosh, that corn is not going to store well. We learned the hard things back in, like, you know, 88 in that way when the things just didn't do well and it was hard to store. But I think you have to watch your local markets. If you got a good basis, move it. If you just want to do a basis contract, you know, do that or whatever. But I think in most cases, you're better off to price it, take the cash. If that's real close and whatever, you just take that and you put it away and you go home. But if there's 5 to 10 cents left in there that you want to stay long the market, look at the options like both the other guys have said.
So I can hear farmers saying, but my corn's in good condition. This might be in parts of Illinois, a large part of Iowa for sure. And they're thinking, it's got to come. I got to have a better price. It's got to show up sometime over the summer. And not one of you are telling them this is the case.
We got a 1-8 carryout. What's bullish about it? You know, everybody's going to sit here and wait going, yeah, but we got light test weight corn out there. And yeah, you know, we're going to feed more. We're going to have to grind more corn for ethanol, you know, to get the same amount of ethanol output and stuff. And yeah, we're going to find some stocks numbers in March or maybe in June are going to be smaller. But what are going to be the other factors that are playing into the market at that particular point in time too? You know, maybe those numbers don't come out all that bullish relative to the whole package of things that really is fitting into the marketplace as a whole. So I still go back. I think March, April really is early April. Still the time to get sales on the books. Beyond that, nah, I don't like it.
You're correct, Todd. Your corn's in good condition. I know you're a heck of a good farmer, but the problem is I've talked to your neighbor. Your neighbor's corn's not very good, so that's what you got to worry about.
Is it catching? Because I don't want that to happen.
Call your brothers.
might be the case. But truly, this is what you've got to hear it every day from farmers, right? You've got to hear this every day from farmers.
Yeah, farmer's a great guy to work with. You're always optimistic and always there's always hope and positive thinking in through there. And it is a quality issue in some areas. But like Dale said, 1.8, that's plenty. And if we get 94 million acres, trend line yield 78, I know one advisory service has this coming crop year a 3 billion bushel carryout. I think that's a little rich right now, but that's what we got to work through in here. So I like moving the cash, replace it so you're on board if something develops down the road. But I think your financial bottom line is the key to keep an eye on.
Plus the Safrina crop, second crop corn in Brazil, appears to be going in under good conditions.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to be great as far as we're looking at right now. Argentina might not be as good. There's a little bit iffy, but Brazil's getting good rains and everything along the way. We need, and all the guys have said, and only God can take care of this one, we need a big weather scare somewhere. I mean, look what happened to the wheat because of Australia, the fires, the drought, the whole bit like that. Can it just keep on climbing and go into things and be strong? Hey, we could see China buy a lot of ethanol. We could see them buy a lot of DDGs. We could see that market open up if we can get this coronavirus under control, and they need some stuff in a hurry. The scariest thing is that we're looking at, though, is we have really ramped up our hogs and our cattle and whatever like that, but they are looking at ramping up, replacing their herds in a 3 to 4 year period. And then they might not need all our hogs. But for right now, we can feed hogs and cattle. I think that the U.S. government is behind on what our feed use has been, and our stocks are maybe going to be lower if they get realistic about it. I think that could help, you know, for this year and some of that. That's why we're saying spend some of this for some of those calls. If we just thought it was as sad as it sounded going around here, we wouldn't have said buy some calls along with it. We would have said take your money, go pay your banker, keep him happy, and get your next loan in. But we've heard stuff from Farm Credit. We've heard stuff from other bankers. We're hearing from bankers in, down in the Louisiana, Arkansas area. And there's farm auctions that are going to happen. And we want these guys to be sound. We want them to have cash. We want them to be in business next year because we need them for our customers.
What do we tell producers about soybeans for new crop?
You know, when you look at beans, you know, it's really interesting, even with 84, take the USDA's 85 million acre today acre number that they put out here today, and I don't know where they're going to put out their S&Ds tomorrow. The S&D I worked up, I'm still at a carryout of about 460 million bushel. I think the soybeans are the one crop that something could go wrong. You know, we've pulled down, we've gotten away from the 900 million now. Yeah, we've got a big South American crop, but what happens if we end up not planting 85 million acres? What happens if late summer tends to be a little bit dry? And yeah, I know I got a 2 and a 3 year cycle low due at the end of the calendar year, but also that tells me about time, not price. And then what happens once I get into early 2021? And what if Brazil finally has a crop that has a dinger on it? You know, there can be some long-term things, and I think that's where you have to think about in beans. It's somewhere beyond the end of this calendar year into next year that there may be something that could give us a lift.
You look at new crop, basis is still fairly wide. In our area, 4,500, 5,000, so you got to put a price floor or else do a hedge or arrive or good old-fashioned hedge because I think basis would be much better. The bull story, I think, still coming, and it's in the world vegetable oil, palm oil, bean oil market. Even the last NOPA crush report showed we had some ample soybean oil stocks, and we've got aggressive crush for meal. We got a huge livestock sector to feed, but the long-term bull's the bean oil.
Bean oil is the long-term bull. Just on shorter supplies, again, why is this the case?
Well, if you look at 2020, the renewable fuels and biofuel and the growth potential in China and India and so forth, it's brewing. It's going to take some time. It's not going to evolve like the ethanol market or be as quick, but it's there.
So you're talking about advanced fuels in the United States and usage across the planet in that case. All right, so we have soybean, a big crop coming out of South America. and USDA, though we don't have their supply and demand table when we're recording this on Thursday afternoon, we'll have it by the time it airs on Friday because it comes out Friday morning. USDA to this point says we've got a whole bunch more acres of corn or soybeans coming this year. Not surprising because there were so few last year. They also have just this really low price for soybeans still. Only a nickel lower than this year, but still it remains a low price.
It sure does, Todd. I mean, and with those numbers, it doesn't add up to a positive number unless we raise a lot of bushels. If we raise a lot of bushels, that, of course, hits us again on the side of the head. But I think along the way, we can look ahead to the biodiesel that we're talking a lot about in different countries going on. I think we're looking at a lot of people switching over that. The palm oil's taken it on the hit on the head this year and really pushed up the bean oil along the way. We've got to have some times and some cycles that look here. We are going to get, the Chinese have continued to say, and all of our trade representatives, they're pretty hard-nosed, are continuing to say they're going to do business with us. Now, it's going to do business at the world level of prices. So that doesn't mean they're just going to buy it from us and the price is going to go up $2 more than Brazil. But we are going to be able to move our product out of here. We do have a great livestock herd right now. Our meat's going to be in demand for quite a while, at least till the Chinese get back on their feet and get their herds built back up. And who knows how much more some of this other stuff is spread around. And I do think our chicken industry is going to eat an awful lot of bean meal.
Let's get a final word from each of you. Dale, I'll start with you from Grain Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois.
You know, the price cycles tell me to be somewhat defensive as I go through the rest of this calendar year. But I think the one thing when I look ahead is, you know, we're really getting more due for some kind of a huge crop problem somewhere along the way in South America. So when I start thinking about that, I start looking past, you know, this calendar year and thinking about 2021, and I think we got a real lift. And when you put that in combination with China's got a contract on the books, they have to buy stuff from us. Boy, if I start cutting back on the Brazilian crop hard and they're due for having a real crop problem, we got a real lift in beans coming after we put in these long-term lows somewhere along the way. So I'm long-term optimistic, but I think for the next calendar year, until the end of it, I'm going to be somewhat defensive.
Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities.
Had the opportunity to talk to quite a few bankers this winter, and the saving grace was these government payments, and that kept guys afloat. If those cease, it's going to be a real challenge. So I think we got to manage risk, but leave your upside open. And there's some creative strategies to do that. You just got to be open to it and take a few steps to look at those.
And Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities.
Check your bins. Make sure they're in good condition. Don't take the docks on this cheap grain as it is, but watch your basis levels. Gosh, we've seen some good ones for this time of year. We've seen some great ones go on. And, you know, just remember to be moving things when you can make a profit there along the way. And then, like I say, if you want to turn around and buy a reasonable priced call to re-own it, fine. But take advantage of that extra 25 cents that we're being offered in many cases.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of the program online anytime you'd like at willag.org. You can also buy your ticket for the All Day Ag Outlook there. They're just $30, or you can call 800-898-1065. The All Day Ag Outlook is at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on the third day of March. Full details are online at willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.